to understand why the Women's Legal Center have this concern. When we can actually meet with Women's Legal Centre, of course, is another matter, but let's deal with the principle, the smuts, and then Mr. Jeffrey.
I'm reluctant to hold in hearings which sit in judgment on judgment of the courts.
No, that's not
no, I know that's not how you're casting it, but it's, you know. The Women's Legal Centre, I think, are not the only people concerned. I read in this week somewhere that the attorneys are concerned about disparities in sentencing, which is, I think, a slightly different matter. And refers to work that has been done by the Law Reform Commission in this regard. Apparently they, I have not read it or seen it, apparently they suggested such a thing as a sentencing council. Now, the Judicial Council, which we will in due course legislate, which is still being drafted, might be more appropriate body. I would suggest let's not reject these requests out of hand. I certainly don't think we should do them now. We are seized with legislation of great import, in particular the 17th Constitutional Amendment and Superior Courts, around which there are some urgencies. A third and fourth law will follow on the Judicial Council in the area, and that might be the appropriate time. I would think we wouldn't be looking at anything until next year, but then there is a case. But I would actually not do this until we deal with and create the new Judicial Council, because I think we are creating a new regime, giving the judicial branch complete institutional independence, and I think that that council is supposed to deal with policy, and I think let's do things in the right logical order, and let's not reject them, but not until next year, and I'm certainly not interested in that in the country.
No, I think perhaps I put it across incorrectly. It's not about judging the judges, it's about the disparity in sentences. And so that is what we are being requested to discuss. Okay. And it comes also from the Law Society.
I actually don't think there's anything wrong in criticizing a judge or judges if they give an appallingly inappropriate sentence, which they sometimes do, which was the whole reason for minimum sentences. But I agree partially with Ms. Mutz's point, but I think we should agree in principle to see them. Probably the best time would be towards the end of the session. We have a legislative window to get things through before it shuts. In other words, that we, if we want to bills passed by plenary this year, we've got to have them ready a certain amount of time before they're heard in plenary. Towards the end, when we don't have a chance of getting any legislation through, we could probably look scheduling in a meeting with them. And I think it is a valid issue. There have been problems with sexual offences, particularly that's why where the minimum sentence is actually started. It would be useful, I think.
All right. Mr. Schaefer, and then Spinola Jackson.
We did desire that with the sexual offences amendment that we did, that we were going to relook at those specific penalties. And I think in that context we can have a look at, we can get submissions from them maybe as to what they feel should be appropriate there. But the point is, if we're looking at the disparities of sentences, we are effectively looking at judgments. And I don't think that's entirely our role. But if it leaves us to think that we need to make legislative changes, then I suppose we could look at it on that basis. But yeah, I would in principle support it, but I would just support Ms. Smith, but not only them who have interest in the matter, and perhaps then we should have a proper full hearing on any organisations who wish to come and address.
Thank you, Chief. Sexual offences continue to constitute a category of major crimes, and I think whatever is concerned about sexual offences in South Africa, we really need to actually manage to give a hearing to any establishment that wants to engage. And of course, we're not actually challenging the judges, but their concern is valid where the sentences have been reduced. And I think punishment is one of the main things that needs to be taken into consideration if there's got to be any form of redress. So I would actually support the notion that we meet with them. And of course, we look at our schedule and see to what extent we can be in the position to accommodate them.
All right. We'll look at our program, Mr. Romano. All right. The last matter, honorable members, relates to a document which we received from the Office of the Public Protector. It follows a lengthy letter from an anonymous writer, which I normally take and throw in the nearest bin. But in this case, the Public Protector himself responded and has written both to the Commission and as well as his ID officers in response to those allegations. Now, the matter has been referred to us, not to an ad hoc committee. I want us to agree today here that we're not going to raise this matter here today, that we will find an appropriate occasion when we can do so in a nice, calm, responsible and mature manner. Can we please agree to that? All right. Madam, I've already welcomed you. As is usually the case, I will ask you to introduce your team. Some of the faces I recognize, and there are some, madam, that are new to me, so if you could please assist us.
Honourable Chairperson of the Justice and Constitutional Development Protocol Committee, Honourable Members of the Committee, Members of the Media, and Members of the Public that are here today, it is a privilege to once again come here and address you on activities of the Public Protector under primarily the constitutional provisions in Section 182 and the accounting requirements under the Public Protector Act. Before I proceed with my presentation, Honourable Chairperson, I will introduce the staff of the Public Protector that is accompanying me today. Next to me is the Chief Executive Officer of the Office, Mr. Kemba Mucheto. Behind me is the spokesperson of the office, Ms. Halalelo Masebe. Sitting next to her is someone you've always known as the strategy and compliance officer in the office, Ms. Bonatekho Mokhaladi. She is now the executive manager responsible for early resolution. And sitting next to her is the Chief Executive Officer of the office. I just promoted her. Before I get to the Chief Financial Officer, sitting next to the Chief Executive Officer is our new compliance officer, Ms. Rosalyn Moshiba. And sitting next to standing for Mr. Rosen van Rensburg today is Mr. Molosi from our Western Cape office. And finally, getting properly now to the Chief Executive Officer, to the Chief Financial Officer, Ms. Mitchell. It is a privilege, as I indicated, Honourable Chairperson, to be here today. We are going to talk very briefly, just introduce the presentation. We will talk about the complaints we've investigated and the trends indicated in those complaints.
I'm sorry, to ask the Deputy Public Protector, where is she?
Thank you, Honourable Jeffrey. My omission, my apology on behalf of the Deputy Public Protector, she is on study leave. Thank you. And just going back then to the presentation, just a very brief introduction, Honourable Members. Then I'll go to complaints investigated and trends, our achievements and the difficulties. The Chief Executive Officer We will talk to financial statements. I will then come back later to wrap up. Thank you. As indicated, honorable members, we are reporting in terms of section 182.5 of the Constitution and section 8 of the Public Protector Act. The purpose of our report today is twofold. The one is the state of improper conduct or maladministration in state affairs and the trends to be noted by Parliament. We also are here to account for our own activities based on the money you gave us in the previous year and the strategic plan we presented to you to approve. We will also make, as usual, specific requests to Parliament or special requests to Parliament. Honourable Chairperson, we presented an annual report to Parliament, and on page 9 of the annual report to Parliament, we have given a snapshot of what we did. And since honourable members said previously that it really doesn't help when we just go back to presenting the annual report as it was, we have done a mix in terms of how we're going to present. As indicated in the annual report, honourable Chairperson, we handled 27,376 cases last year. They were mixture between complaints presented to the office and own initiative investigations. The main part of those complaints is that from the previous year, we had inherited 5,603 cases that were carried over. And from the year under review, we received an additional 30,626 cases. With the resources that you gave us, Honourable Chairperson, we finalised 16,763 complaints, and to this year, we carried over 10,183 complaints. The number of complaints we received had increased by over 4,000, and the number of cases that we finalized was 2,000 more than the previous year. So even though we carried over more cases than previous, we concluded more cases than the previous year, honorable justice. In the next slide, we just give an overview of cases over a period of 3 years. We're looking at 2009-10, 2010-11, and then 2011-12, which is the year under review. You will see that in terms of the cases carried over, the number of cases is similar to the number of cases we did in 2009-10, but it's more than cases carried over in the previous year. One of the things we noticed was, because we did a lot of activities, outreach activities last year, a lot of the cases we carried over we received towards the end of the year itself. If we look at cases received, there's a jump between 2010-11 and 2011-12. The previous year it was 16,252 cases that were received. In the year under review, honorable chairperson, we received 20,626 cases. I must indicate that in the year we are on right now, the jump is much higher because we do a daily intake and a weekly assessment. The number of cases investigated, you will see then that in the previous year we had concluded 19,603 cases. Or we had investigated or handled, and then in the year under review, 27,976, honorable chairperson. And the number of cases finalized, I've already indicated that it has increased by 2,000 cases from 14,148 to 16,763. And the next table there, shows the number of cases carried over to the year where we are now, We carried over 10,183 cases. A mixture between the huge increase in the number of our cases and the fact that some of the cases came towards the end of the financial year. We also thought, Honourable Chairperson, we should bring to your attention the caseload per investigator during the year under review. The establishment is divided into four operational branches. The first branch is intake assessment and customer service. We have indicated that the number of cases that would on a day-to-day basis be carried over them, but be handled by them, is 247 cases. They deal mainly with assessment, and sometimes they have to dispose the cases through assessment so that they don't send them to the investigation branches when they don't need to be investigated. And the assessment often involves people being called, and through the telephone exchanges, the matters can be resolved. The early resolution branch has 9 investigators. Its total workload was 1,516. And the caseload per investigator was 168. The early resolution branch does ADR kind of resolution of resolution of disputes, mainly through inquiries, conciliation, mediation, and a combination of this. So we give them the bread and butter cases, and we ensure that they try and complete these cases over a period of 2 to 3 months. In our previous strategic plan, you will note, honourable members, that we had said that we wanted to complete these cases in 2 months, because the standard internationally is that they should be completed in 1 month, because they're bread and butter matters. But the auditors generally advised us to revise our targets now and put in a resolution to up to 6 months, which is sad for the people, but real in terms of the resources that we have. Well, we'll talk to that. So their workload is supposed to be higher, of course, because they are simpler and less complex than the others. The service delivery branch is a complex investigation branch, but that deals with service failure. We divide our investigations between those that relate to service failure and those that relate to conduct failure. Service failure would be more the administrative justice thing, that the conduct of the state wasn't fair, wasn't just, or the state didn't act. That would be service failure. Conduct failure is when the allegation is that it was abuse of power, abuse of state resources, corruption, and related matters. So the service branch only has 9 investigators. They dealt with 675 complex investigations in the year under review, with each one of them having to handle 75 cases. The good governance and integrity branch is the one that deals with the conduct failure ones, the executive ethics matters that have to be concluded within 30 days on the chairperson, and all of the allegations of corruption, governance failure, abuse of state resources, abuse of power. Each investigator in the previous year had to handle about 36 cases, which again is above the norm, because these are complex investigations. Ideally, we would want each investigator to be carrying about 2 to 3 complex cases at a time, with the allowance of concluding each complex investigation within 3 to 6 months. And we've indicated the cases that were concluded in provinces. It gets a little bit more complex. Look at the Eastern Cape. They have 12 staff members. Now we're including more than the investigators. They have 12 staff members, and they have the number of the total workload carried over in that province was 3,476. And the case with the investigator was 219. Free State, 8. Number of cases, 2,497. Caseload, 312 per person. Gauteng, 11. Total workload carried by that office, 2,497. Workload, 426. ZuluNatal, 11. Total workload, 1,833. Caseload, 167. Gauteng, 11 people, total caseload 4,684, total workload per person 426. Limpopo, 11 South Indies, total number of cases 1,390, caseload 126 per person. Mpumalanga, 9. Total workload of the office 1,908. Total workload per person 212. Northern Cape 13. Total workload 1,786, which brings us to 137 cases per person. Northwest 13, total workload 2,974, which brings us to 229 per person. And finally, the Western Cape South 13, caseload 2,511, which brings us to 193 per person. Honourable members, we just brought that. I know it was tedious. We wanted to bring this as a context to indicating the workload versus then our ability to do some of the things tirelessly. That was just the reason we did that. So we have then provided a total statistical overview, which really is a detail of the statistics that we presented just now. I'm going to skip that slide, Honourable Members. Then just to go to case resolution, I indicated that early resolution upgraded barter methods. Somebody's owed their pension, their gratuity, their pay. It usually involves money or some other agent matter. Our plan at the time was to resolve everything within 2 months, Honourable Members. And we achieved to resolve most of the cases within 1 month, which is 46% of our early resolution matters. Then, an additional 14% was resolved within 2 months, which was the total timeline we had given ourselves. But unfortunately, the rest was then resolved within 3 months and longer than that. With the advice of the Auditor General, we revised our target so that we are more realistic. Obviously, as we get more resources, because the Treasury has been very responsive, as we get more resources, we'll keep looking at revising our targets again, Honourable Members. The total turnaround times now for the complex investigation, which would be the service delivery ones and the good governance and integrity ones. Our total timeline is to try to resolve all of the cases within 12 months, Honourable Members. You will see that we resolve most of the cases within 1 to 6 months. That was 68%. And then the rest, a huge number, which is 28%, was resolved within 7 to 12 months. And then unfortunately, though, we had to resolve another 14% within a period of 12 months or more. We do try to do our best to make sure that cases don't age beyond a year, but the circumstances beyond our control often force cases to age beyond 12 months. And usually it's our workload, and sometimes we don't get the level of cooperation we need from organs of state. With what Honourable Jeffrey and other Honourable Members, you've always asked us, we have to indicate impact as well. We shouldn't just talk about the numbers. we should also talk about what happened to those cases really at the end of the day. So the next slide tries to answer that question. We're saying 66% of the complaints are upheld, meaning 56% of those complaints, people were right. There had been improper conduct, there had been maladministration, and many of them had been treated unjustly. 20% were not upheld, meaning that the complainant may have misunderstood the legal parameters under which they needed to be dealt with, and the conduct of the state in those circumstances was justifiable. In a case, in 24% of the cases, no conclusion could be drawn, because in any of those cases, the matter is resolved. It's resolved simply because the complainant disappears, or the organ of state then just appropriately explains the matter. It's not a question of whether we uphold the complaint or we don't uphold the complaint. It's resolved by the time we deal with it. We thought we should also bring to your attention, honourable members, who are the usual customers in terms of government departments. Well, we call them the usual customers rather than top customers. So we gave 15 of the state institutions. The first one, the highest number is from Justice. I must indicate both the Department of Justice itself. Mm-hmm. Because the Department of Justice houses a number of all kinds of states. That would be law firm, the master's office, the courts, etc. So it's not really, I think from the department itself, the number of complaints were very, very negligible. So it's mostly really delays in appeals, honourable members, and delays in appeals, and then the master's office has become a serious contender, and in terms of complaints, yes, and then the rest would just be normal maladministration from the municipalities accounted for 1,204. And we think this year the number is going to be much higher because of the kind of responses we got to our stakeholder consultative process in the public area. Municipalities, then the Department of Local Government. Here we put it as COPTA, but it's not really complaints against COPTA itself only. It's all of the different departments of local government in the provinces, not just COPTA national. So again, it shouldn't be assumed that COPTA as department is having all of these complaints of maladministration. Poma says, on the other hand, the complaints come from Poma says itself, and it was number 4, accounted for 1,135 complaints. Then the Department of Labor is not the Department of Labor. A lot of the complaints would be related to the agencies under the Department of Labor, including the CCMA. And a lot of them are primarily from UIF, workers' compensation. Again, the number of complaints against the Department of Labor is exactly the same as the Department of Justice. They are negligible, not much about the department itself. And we have South African Police Services. There it would be the service centers, again, not necessarily headquarters, but it is, because it's one department, then we mix them. Human settlements, the complaints, again, not necessarily against human settlements national, but they combine human settlements national and the provinces. Then the next one is FAFSA. South African Social Services Agency. The Department of Education includes the department and complaints against schools, and complaints also involving tertiary institutions would be included there. Department of Health, not primarily against the Department of Health, it's national. It's complaints relating to services at the various health centers, which would be the hospitals themselves. social development, and it's national and provincial. We have quite a number of complaints from the South African National Defence Force, which I must indicate, though, that now that the military ombud has been formed, we are now referring most of those to them, and the number we are receiving is declining. Then we get complaints against the GEPF, which is no longer the GEPF, but during this financial year, it was still called the GEPF, which was Government Employee Pension Fund, whose name has changed, and then Department of Transport and Department of Agriculture. We haven't mentioned some, even though occasionally we get a complaint against water affairs, etc., but those would be negligible. So we only dealt with the top 15 usual. In terms of the work we did, I'm now going into just what we did under each strategic objective. Our first strategic objective is to be accessible to and trusted by all persons and communities. We ran 878 clinics, honorable members. In addition, we had 259 mosque clinics. Just to indicate the difference, we have clinics that are run in all of the nine provinces, and then we have a special service which is called the Mobile Office of the Public Protector. It also runs clinics. At the moment, it's currently only in three or four provinces, but in our strategic plan, we're rolling it out to all of the provinces, given the fact that we don't have the money to have offices throughout the country for accessibility purposes. We conducted 111 information sections, out of a target of 63. I must just indicate, in all of these, the targets were exceeded. And MOP 20H information sessions, when the target was 21. In this particular strategic objective, the targets were exceeded. Then we conducted 78 radio slots in all provinces out of a target of 45. We had 58 newspaper articles out of 45 targeted. We conducted 96 collaborative activities with other organs of aid, primarily other Chapter 9 institutions, out of an annual target of 54. We conducted two surveys on stakeholder trust, confidence and faith in the public protector. As we had indicated, we needed to get a sense of whether we're meeting people's expectations. We had promised that we'd do a good governance week, which was done as required. Five national events which we had targeted were all conducted, being Youth Month, Women's Month, Heritage Month, 16 Days of Activism, and Human Rights Month. These are used to draw a link between the role of the public protector as an ombudsman and these other national priorities, such as the advancement of young people, women, Heritage Month, violence against women, and the promotion and protection of human rights. Strategic objective two, honorable chairperson, is on prompt remedial action. Our target there is swift investigations that are effective. We talk about rigor and swiftness. Intake assessment procedures and processes were reviewed, and a procedure manual was developed and approved to try and streamline and expedite our swift investigation. Most of the cases were resolved through AR. I must indicate here, Honourable Chairperson, you will see that our annual report will indicate that in this particular year, the number of reports declined. Sometimes we'd be in the process of writing a report and we think tanked it, but if we found a need to meet with them and they resolve the matter, we would then not issue a report because it wasn't necessary. Ultimately, what we're trying to do is to make sure that they do the right thing. If they can do the right thing without a report, if it's a failure, we do so. We issue a report only if there isn't any agreement or settlement on service failure, or it is a conduct failure matter, and therefore we need a report. And if we want to sustain the allegations, We also issue a report if there are systemic deficiencies that we want the organ of state concerned and other organs of state to understand those deficiencies and then pay attention to them in future. We concluded our response protocols as we had planned, and 14 of these were done with organs of state to ensure prompt response to complaints. Going to strategic objective number 3. We conducted 8 systemic investigations, or rather we identified 8 of them, honorable chairperson and members, and 3 of those we finalized during this particular financial year, and 5 of them carried over, because systemic investigations are labor intensive and research intensive. It's not easy to conclude them timely. They could be concluded within 3 or 6 months if we had enough resources, but given the fact that our investigators are multitasking, we then had to preserve them. We conducted 10 own initiative investigations. Three of those were finalized and 7 are ongoing. And then we did hold a good governance conference. We thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for supporting the good governance conference. It is coming again next week, and we would want this event to be on calendar of the country as a whole in future. It's no longer Public Protector Good Governance Week. It's a country good governance week where we want everyone to focus on good governance, and they can do their own activities without necessarily being directed by the activities of the Public Protector. We consulted with stakeholders in the provinces as required, and various stakeholder consultative forums were held. Some of them are held directly by provincial offices. There's ongoing stakeholder consultative processes in the provinces. Then we have one annual stakeholder consultative process which takes place between July and August each year. So we did this one in the year under review. We had promised that we would benchmark our services against fellow institutions that do the same work or similar work. We benchmark against the UK Parliamentary and Health Service Ombudsman and against SARS. We also benchmarked against a private sector organization, Alexandra Forbes, who later assisted us without any cost to look at enhancing our ability to function as a purpose-driven organization. Under strategic objective number 4, which is about being an efficient and effective organization, this deals with our internal management and governance processes, but also the efficiency with which we handle our investigations. What we want to highlight for your attention is all financial press regulations and deadlines were met, or mostly met. We have obtained an unqualified audit report. There were a few findings or matters of emphasis from the Auditor General in the previous year, and we dealt with those in this particular year, and our action plan in this regard was approved. In this year, again, there were a few matters of emphasis, which again, we've now come up with an action plan, which has been approved by the Auditor General. Our vision, of course, is to have an audit without any letters of emphasis. And we're moving towards that. If we look at the number of letters of emphasis this year, being far less than the previous year, and last year has been far less than the year before last. We have reviewed some of our financial policies, approved and implemented this. Strategic objective number 5 talks to optimal performance and service-focused culture. We reviewed our HR plan and we have implemented it. We have reviewed our organizational structure, which has been a pressing issue, and it was approved by the Minister for Public Service and Administration, and Parliament approved it. Now, the Minister of Finance brought back with a few questions, And then working with them, we've addressed those issues, and hopefully now it will now be implemented if funding is provided. 95% of all approved and funded vacancies were filled. And we have reviewed our human resources development plan and implemented it. One of the key things we did during this year was to invite this private sector company to help us work on a purpose-driven organization. We're combining our leadership and team building processes with our performance management processes or performance enhancement processes. That's one of the things that we did at that year. And they took it part of that process. We had several interactions with this private company that is helping us for free. And then we had a leadership seminar on a purpose-driven organization in March last year. The other things that we did included ensuring that our staff uses our employee wellness program, which is a very important program because our staff deal with a lot of trauma arising from people who feel treated badly by the state, and it is important that they undergo debriefing beyond the need to just use an employee wellness program by all employees. We developed a change management strategy during this year, and we are busy implementing it. It is part of this whole purpose-driven organization. We've integrated all of those processes so that we don't have one process that is looking at performance enhancement, one looking at leadership, one looking at change management. We have decided what kind of organization we want to be, and all of these processes are supposed to work together to enhance our ability to become the organization we've decided we want to be. We reviewed our core values. It was really just to combine them so that we ended up with only 5 core values. Initially we had 10. And workshops were conducted to make sure that all our staff members understand our values. And workshops were also conducted around customer service improvement in the organization. I have already indicated, Honorable Chairperson and members, that our turnaround time did improve, but we still haven't achieved the target, and under the advice of the Auditor General, we have finally relented and decided to revise this target, at least to be in line with the resources that we have at the moment. I must indicate that the standard international approach, though, is that administrative investigations should be concluded within 6 months, the complex ones, because you want to act when the iron is so hot. Sometimes we deal with matters where you may want to reverse contract or to reverse transaction. If the investigation takes more than a year, by the time you conclude it, a lot of water has passed under the bridge and it's not possible to reverse it. So from our side, even though we're going to revise our target, we'll still continue to try and ensure that we maintain speedy resolutions. I do know that in Denmark, for example, the auditor, the ombudsman, which is the public protector in that country, has to inform Parliament why certain investigations took more than 5 months. And that's now the total of investigations, not just the early resolution matters. Our response protocol target was missed by about 3%, and then the promulgation of rules has been delayed because we concluded the rules, everything was done during the year under review. Then you will recall, honourable members, that during that year we were not able to meet with Parliament, and then eventually we were able to meet with Parliament, and we got extremely useful suggestions on how we could streamline the rules. We then got external people to streamline the rules. At the time they said they could help us within 2 months. But they were not able to help us in 2 months, but they have finally helped us. The rules have been streamlined, and then now they've been divided into rules and guides, so that the whole process is simplified. So we will soon be requesting a meeting so that we can present to you the simplified rules, which have better alignment between the rules and the rights people enjoy under the Public Protector Act. systemic and own initiative investigations, we reached the target when it comes to identifying them, but when it came to concluding them on time, we couldn't conclude them on time because of the time, because of the capacity problems. Timelines for investigations under Executive Members' Ethics Act were not met. They're supposed to be concluded within 1 month, but we now agreed that our Good Governance and Integrity Unit will now dedicate one person whose job is only any investigations and no other investigation, but that person will be assisted so that at least those investigations can be expedited. Our electronic case management system and reporting tool, when we came last year, we were considering whether we should impair it or not. We finally were able to establish what exactly is the problem with the case management system. You recall that it was purchased several years ago at the cost of about 10 million. We discovered that the implementation partner did not have the capability that they were supposed to have. So the system itself, which is called a SAP system, is fine, but the implementation process had not been optimal. So we're now working with the parties now to make sure that the implementation is optimized. We've benchmarked against the UK Ombudsman SARS, and more recently we also have benchmarked against our counterparts in Singapore, and the process is on track to remedy the situation. Our PVMS was not review of our PDMF was not concluded in that year, because we decided in that year that the PDMS system needed to be linked to this purpose-driven organization, and we are going through that, and based on that system we will then revise our performance agreement. One of the problems with the previous performance agreements was that they were quantity focused rather than quality focused. So we're aligning quality and quantity, particularly when it comes to investigation outputs. We couldn't establish a call center because we didn't have the money to do so. And we have been engaging with Treasury in regards to additional finances. And so we are in the process of establishing a call center. At the moment, our toll-free line is one person and one line. So it creates problems in terms of congestion. It also creates problems for investigators, because one person who handles the call center then has to put the calls to investigators. So whilst it is investigating, they also have to be answering calls from the public. It doesn't work well in terms of focus. So we want to pull that away from the investigations, so that we have people that are focusing on call center linked to our intake assessment and customer service unit, that they will have to do that. Our strategy for procurement and provisioning of infrastructure and facilities, there were some few things that the Auditor General wanted us to sort out during that financial year, and we hadn't concluded them, but it's something that now has been handled. I want to now leave the financial statements and audit reports to the Chief Executive Officer, and if he wants to bring the financial office on board, he's welcome to do it. Thank you again, Honourable Member.
Thank you, Professor. As Paul Protector has indicated, we got a clean audit as well with a few matters of evidence. Members will remember that in the 2008-2009 we had a bad audit, we had a qualified audit. We moved away from that to a number of matters of evidence, which we have almost this one in charge reduce them into two. In fact, there has not been any of the petition of those. So the public pressure has indicated the idea is that come the next financial year, these two matters of offences are actually eliminated from our report. The public pressure has touched on the impairment of the case management system. What we have done now in terms of our ban based on the case management system was to impair it for about 3 million. In fact, having purchased almost 7 years ago, 10, its value is much concern about the state. So the idea was to engage CETA, of which we have engaged as well, together with the Treasury, to actually work on the new system as well. So that is ongoing, and the idea is that by the next financial year, we'll have a proper case management system. We met with the SARS, and for free, they came, they interrogated the system, and they gave us proper advice as to what we need to do going forward. And I mentioned here that we really have not been getting joy with CETA in this regard, because in terms of the law, we have been, or we are obliged to use them, but we have engaged some of our colleagues, like Lars, for instance, to assist them. But to tell us on what basis they managed to get more of their infrastructure with that ladder, so it indicated the processes that we need to follow, of which we have engaged as well. So the idea is that come this financial year, we'll have a proper and well functioning management system. The second issue, Chair, was the issue of the ongoing concern of about 5 million, which was the result of the leases that we had previously that we took over from the Public Works Department, and there has been some confusion with Public Works and Justice as to what's responsible for the payment. It has come to us now, and obviously Public Works will not write off that 5 million. And the idea is to work within our baseline to address that 5 million as well, especially in terms of management of our commitment to ensure that through our baseline we are able to move away from this 5 million. The Public Court has indicated in terms of our predetermined objective, what we did not, achieve. Of course, in terms of the percentage, that amounts to about 24%, mainly because of the times that we set ourselves where are realistic. So, although we're not even happy with that amount, that what the auditor should have built, we felt that it was quite even below that 24%. But that's the amount, that's the big in terms of our freedom and that was not addressed, and then we've worked on the management plan to make sure that we address that. One of course is when the public sector comes back is the issue of getting more additional funding, because as you have seen as well in terms of those figures, how then for instance you find one investigator handling over 400 cases, which is quite humanly impossible to handle to give a proper service, hence not meeting our target. So with intervention of the committee, we hope we can get some more additional funding from Public Works as well. Also some of the issue was the payment suppliers with the 30 days, although it was not that it came out in the management letter, of which we are now addressing. We find out most of these instances are the invoices that came from the provinces. So we have dedicated more powers and responsibilities to the provinces as well to be able to sort out and pay those and approve payment of those accounts that falls within their money within their jurisdiction in terms of amount. We have mentioned the issue of the case management system and how we are addressing it as well. I think. Okay. In terms of the vacancies and us, we quite well within all below the threshold set by the Public Service Administration in terms of the filling of funded vacancies, just the 4.6%, which most of them the financial year have been built. But as you can see in the chart, we still have 402 positions, 1% of those which are in fact unfunded. So that we hope that will be addressed with the approval of the cost of the new structure as well. So the public sector will be with it. Oh, on oil spill verdicts. These are the requests for additional funding. As we have seen, most of the targets that we're not meeting relate to a systemic investigation. You know. So the idea is that if we can help at least this financial year, more so that amount will be able to cater and get some and then address some of those some of those systemic investigations that are outstanding as well. In respect of occupational specific dispensation OSG, we're still lagging up behind in terms of the implementation as well. The figure starting this 2013-14 just over 8 million up to the entire MTF as well, that we can be able to address the issue of the specific occupational dispensation. The investigative training program as well, we need at least 100 of those trainees similar to the lines of the Auditor General, the Public Protector Media Partial Plea to the Trade of the Committee in respect of this, which they were sympathetic, I'm sure more emphasized, or if the committee can also go behind us in terms of putting this into place. We need just over 7 million in respect of getting those trainees into the office. Remember that we don't have any dedicated training for investigators, so coming into the system through will make sure that some other institutions, some other chapter 9s as well, can feed from this trainee program that we are investigating as well. The call center, as the public report has indicated, we don't want something like the legal aid call that lasts up for them, something that can make sure that at least our investors don't get involved in answering the calls and giving advice rather than the investigation. We have made a presentation, a detailed presentation to Treasure as to how much we really need to come up with the call center. I'm sure the emphasis as well. We have a toll-free number, but it's totally useless. It all comes to head office to one person throughout the country, and the same person is supposed to be receptionist in the area to answer the general calls as well. So basically, this is something that we can't do. Whoever identified the case within the office is going to get additional funding as well. This is the additional regional offices. In the last presentation, Jeff has asked in terms of what we want to do in terms of the realignment of our offices in the Northern Cape. We have looked at that as well. Especially in that M4 and M14 line. We've also looked at the major metros as well that don't have our offices, one thing Nelson Mandela and Ekuru Lane, and then the plan is to at least to move in those offices. We have done a lot of work in that. For instance, our Bane office is now into closed down. We're doing outreach in there, and the staff has been absorbed towards Gauden as well. Those were the vehicles of the former box. The one in Siabusa as well is relocating to Witbank as well as part of the entire realignment. But we're going through that to realize that we need a lot more other regional offices, especially in the those metros I have mentioned. And the public was attached as well in terms of getting the mobile offices of the public sector, not in respect of the three provinces, which is the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo, but also in other provinces as well, which of course they are part themselves as well. So that's just over a million rand. The idea is to get just a little bit of capacity and more of a hurdle to ensure service in those areas as well. The automation and re-engineering of the electronic system, that's very, very critical for us, because the agency will spend more time in our offices during the audit, because we still have to use manual in respect of leave and so forth. So the automation and re-engineering just over 10 million. This one will assist us to make sure that we get the proper automation. The SAP system that is for the case management will also cater for the call center as well as the automation of the entire HR system in the office as well. The issue issue of the ongoing concern, as well as the task force need on a mission from the public bank, not more us, because we'll be handling that from our own saving and commitment as well. The cost of living, that 7%, that always takes the entire chunk, because we're not part of the bargaining forum, but we have to pay when it comes to it. So we're looking at just over 1.7 million in respect of that in the next financial year as well. But this financial year is just 1.6 million as well. The strategic project alignment, the public project touched on, basically, and this one is basically more for free, but in terms of the effort, the team building and so forth, and actually to make sure that everybody buys in into this change management project that Alexander Hawk has, is assisting us almost for free as well. It's just 1.2 million now, and then 1.4 million going forward, if we feel is to a certain extent an ongoing project. Because this is an indication of our baseline on the MTF, as agreed with the Treasurer with this financial year, our total budget is just at 1.95 million to 230 million in the next financial year, and to 24 in 2015-2016 financial year. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, just then to wrap up, firstly I want to encourage Honourable Members that we did take the guidance around streamlining our offices, as the CEO has said, but one of the constituencies where we are trying to close our office, and they're not happy about it, Siyabuso, the Chief has written to me to indicate that this is not right. And at the very least, we should have a satellite officer. So I'm just beginning to think that a lot of the communities where we'll be moving offices will have to do a little bit of further consultations with the communities to make sure that they understand that our MOP office is going to be able to assist them. But that means we should get the resources for MOP. Matters to be noted by Parliament based on the presentation, Honourable Chairperson. I just want to draw your attention to the investigations report. In the report itself, our investigations are reflected from pages 12 to 23. We didn't think it was necessary to talk to you about each and every one of those investigations. If members want to ask us about those, we will answer. But we just draw them to your attention, and we want to draw your attention also to the impact of the investigations during that year. In the impact report that we're giving you, we're showing the implementation of the remedial action, which is quite impressive. We've got problems here and there, but most organs of state do the right thing. For the first time this year, Honourable Chairperson, we gave you also a glimpse into our ADR cases, and because we also thought members of the public need to see this. Often people focus on the formal report and they don't get a sense of the many matters that we dealt with. So I draw your attention, Honourable Members, to pages 34 to 27, where we've just shown the ADR part of our work and given you a glimpse into some of those cases, UIF, defrauded pensioners, learners, shelter, various cases, and we could, you could ask on those as well if you want to discuss the total nature of the work we do. Lastly, I draw your attention to the trends on pages 33 to page 34, Honourable Members, in the report. We are asking you to note what are the trends in terms of improper conduct in state affairs, and asking you then to integrate those in your normal work with government departments, specifically with indicators that one of the key problems is for the fact that government departments are not entrenching good governance and principles of administrative justice in day-to-day decisions. The key problem that people have who come to our office is still the fact that decisions are not made. So a lot of people that come to our office are just complaining that somebody has not made a decision, and that's a big problem for them, and that's a big problem for us. So that's something that we need to be integrated in general governance oversight. The second thing that would like to be noted by this parliament is the tendency to ignore laws and applicable policies when people are acting or making decisions. The laws are there, the policies are there. This applies to both service failure and conduct failure, Honourable Jefferson. So one of the things that I would like to see going forward is really all government departments training their employees on administrative justice and on prescripts and policies around the public administration system as a whole. So I indicated that when it comes to just complaints by individual people in communities on service failure, it's really delays in decision making, and the fact that administrative justice is not taken into account and policies are often ignored. That's what is emerging from both the formal report and the AGR report that we've included here. Lastly, on the question of conduct failure, procurement emerged, Honourable Chairperson. You'll see the reports that we've done from the Against the Rules report and many others, that procurement was a major fault line for government, and we're glad that the Minister of Finance took the remedial action and acted on it and has made sure that some of the gaps that we had identified are dealt with. We keep identifying more gaps. I would say in summary, Honourable Chairperson and members, the procurement, there are difficulties around planning and demand management. Often we have projects that my team calls Kirlek projects. The projects that you make from the blue and you siphon a lot of resources into that direction, away from what was planned and away from what is needed in terms of Section 237 of the Constitution, you know, performing constitutional responsibilities timelessly and diligently. That's the first part. And then the problem of due diligence in dealing with procurement. That has emerged during the year under review, and now in the last few months of the new year, that is emerging as we are looking into the RDP program. I haven't made any findings on the RDP program. We'll request an opportunity with this commission to come and present our voices and views report. It's not an adjudicated report. It's just a report on what we heard and what we saw. And then as we are continuing to investigate. But planning is also emerging as an issue. Due diligence in getting the right people and giving the contracts to the right people is a problem. Pricing is a major problem. The overcharging seems to be systemic throughout all levels of government. Then lastly, once the job has been performed, there's a problem with quality assurance, making sure that you pay for what you procured, not something else. And you pay for what you got. So when it comes to the end product, the problem of quality assurance, there's also a problem of what we call false billing. And in the U.S., the major process that looks at making sure that you pay for what you got. You don't pay for something that you never received. So that's one of the things that is emerging, of things being paid for that we never received. So we bring that to your attention, Honourable Members, and then asking that those are some of the things that we're just drawing as conclusions, and that needs to be dealt with at all levels of government. From our side then, just to repeat our final request, Honourable Chairperson, is that we thank you for the support you've given us in regard to asking for more resources. We also thank the Department of Justice for the support it has given us in terms of asking for more resources, and the Treasury itself. But what we've received is still a drop in the ocean. When it comes to investigative capacity, we still need more resources, and we request that you continue to support us in that process. We have, on the advice of the Auditor General, placed a lot of emphasis on a learner or trainee investigator program. Well, we focus now on quantity rather than, you know, expanding the establishment today. So we have requested now 100 trainee investigators. These are like your normal interns, and that will need a lot of supervision, but we think with the extra help we'll be able to do a lot more than what we're doing at the moment. We've had interns previously and currently, and their contribution is incredible, even though they don't have the necessary training, but they have a necessary passion and enthusiasm. So that's one of the things that we're requesting. We also thank you for the cooperation you've given us on the rules and the insights you gave us. We are now going to be bringing back the rules for finalization. We would request then that we complete the process expeditiously, and then we get your support as we implement the rules with organs of state. And lastly, we draw your attention to the reports that we've presented today, and we ask for your support in making sure that those organs of state that have not implemented, there is pressure put to bear on them to make sure that there's implementation, because we say the public protector is a non-judicial enforcement mechanism, but it is not a gate to nowhere. So yes, we implement in a non-judicial way, but there has to be implementation or a process then that is a tiebreaker if the courts of state are not happy with the conclusions of the public protector. Thank you once more for the guidance and the support. And I thank my team and the Deputy Public Protector and the CEO for the efforts they continuously put on our work. And a lot of them work under very difficult circumstances, considering the extent of the workload. I thank them.
Thank you, Public Protector. Now, immediately move on to questions and comments. Mr. Jeffrey, Ms. Schaefer,
thanks, Chair, and thanks to the Public Protector team for the report. A quick question, just, we got your annual report tabled. Yesterday we were given a different version. What was the reason for that? I mean, the reports seem to be the same. All I could notice was that there was one change in the Public Protector's foreword where instead of workmen's compensation, you originally said workers' compensation. There may have been some other ones, but in a context of where there's a problem about money, is it not more appropriate to print an errata? So just to highlight that, I mean, that to me is fruitless and wasted expenditure. But then just to add that I find it difficult to assess the report from the information in your annual report and the information we've been given. So, for example, you know, last year you've given us the slide, which I thought was very useful, relating to the number of investigators, the 137 investigators that you've got. Last year you gave us a slide which was useful, which was the distribution of staff amongst the officers. So we were able to see that Gauteng had 20 staff members in two offices. Northwest had 26 staff members in three offices. We haven't got that this year. So it's difficult to know what is the spread of investigators per office. Is the problem, which I don't understand why it continues, of the, you know, we all know it's the inherited legacy of inheriting the Botswana Ombudsman, but is the over-concentration of resources in Northwest, is the over-concentration of resources in Northwest continuing? You know, because it's absurd that you have, last year that you had 26 staff members in the Northwest with a population you gave the population figures 3.2 million, yet you had 16 staff members in KwaZulu-Natal with a population of 10.8 million, according to your own figures. So you haven't given us that this year. We don't know what the situation is. Then you've got a staff component of 269. 137 are investigators. What do the other people do? We just don't know. You know, there's no indication of that. And as far as the complaints, I mean, I take the point, Public Protector, that you raised in your annual report it's important that Parliament and organs of state note the pattern of maladministration and take measures to arrest the causal and influencing factors. But you did verbally at the end give us some of those trends. But I don't still have a sense. So on your graph, who were the most responsible departments or which subject areas, that one that is on the screen now. You know, this is the Justice and Constitutional Development Portfolio Committee. 1,254 of the matters related to justice. You verbally said it related to some of the matters with the Master's Office. But we have no idea what they are because you haven't told us. We perform oversight over the Master's Office. It would be useful to get that detail of where the problems are. But you're not giving that to us. I did note that one of your reports was into the, which is also something that has been of concern to this committee for some time, was, I think it's report number 4 on the President's Fund for the TRC reparations. Now, I didn't quite understand the report that you put in your annual report, or the summary, I suppose you could call it that you put in your annual report. It seems to be that somebody was wanting, yeah, it's on page 13 of the annual report. Report number 4, President's Fund entitled Pay Victims Their Dues with Interest. And it was a complaint relating to the failure of the President's Fund to expedite the distribution of funds to the victims of human rights violations. And to award additional reparations in accordance with the recommendations of the TRC. Well, it could be in terms of the recommendations adopted by Parliament. That's what's binding, what binds them. And you upheld the complaint of maladministration only on the issue of additional funding. Remedial action required the fund and the Department of Constitutional Development, Justice and Constitutional Development, to expedite drafting of regulations to regulate the release of money from the fund for the outstanding additional reparation measures approved by Parliament for health benefits, social benefits, and community rehabilitation. I didn't understand it. And so I went to look on your website for the report, which is not there. And I did notice that not all your reports are on your website, which I think is a fundamental problem. I mean, your reports should all be there. Now, as far as this matter, just by way of an example, we have been every year, or twice a year, we go into this issue with the Department of Justice. We want figures as to the number of beneficiaries who have not yet been found, how much is still in the fund. They have made some progress in the last year or so in tracing beneficiaries, because a lot of the problem is not being able to trace beneficiaries. As far as the regulations, it's not the Department of Justice, it's the relevant line function departments that have to come up with regulations. So it's not correct to say that the Department of Justice must expedite the drafting of regulations. But the bottom line is, here's something that we've been intricately involved in. I don't know if you've looked at the material when this report was compiled, has come before this committee. It would have been useful to have got your report, but yet we just see it for the first time in your annual report, and we can't even access it on your website. So I think the point I'm trying to make is that I don't think the Public Protector's Office is making use of Parliament sufficiently. It is no use coming to Parliament just to ask for money. You should be actually giving more substance as to what the problems are, and I do think it's a big gap that you can tell us that you had 1,254 complaints involving justice matters. You can vaguely tell us that it involves the Master's Office, many of them. But you can't tell us what were the trends that you detected, what are the issues that we, when we perform oversight, should be raising. And I think that needs to change. Similarly with the rationalization, you know,
The issue wasn't moving the Siyabuswa office. The issue was, and we don't have, you just didn't give us figures this year, what is the threat provincially? Why are your more populated provinces not having more people and more offices? Why do you have, if you drive along as at the N14, you at each town you go to, Uppington, Kuruman, okay, it's not on the N14, but it's close by. Why do you find a public protector's office? That was the issue that we were raising. I mean, it's Freiburg, Uppington, Kuruman, okay, when you don't have an office in Port Elizabeth. You've only got one office in the entire Limpopo. And, yeah, so just those issues. Then on the issue of complaints, obviously with your, I mean, you've exceeded your targets with your public engagement. So it's obviously as your profile gets higher that you will get more complaints. But are you, and therefore you want more money to deal with those complaints. But are you actually, I mean, you do have the power in terms of the Act to refuse a complaint. That's section 6 sub 3 A and B. If it's a state employee and they haven't taken all reasonable steps to exhaust their remedies in terms of the Public Service Act, or other conduct for everybody else and they haven't taken all reasonable steps to exhaust his or her legal remedies in connection with such matter. Now I see in the one slide that you've got, you say there were 1,692 cases that you felt there was no jurisdiction. Okay. But I just wonder whether you're doing that enough. You spoke about pension matters, but there's various pensions ombudsmen. Are they actually, are you referring enough to them, matters enough to them? The police, you had 688 cases. Are you referring matters, we have the ICD, are you referring matters enough to the ICD? And the other, an issue that we've raised for some time, that are you, you know, you've actually said nothing about it, there's nothing in your report or nothing verbally given. Coordination amongst the chapter lines, what is happening? The issue of sharing offices. With the call center, I mean, the one thing we've had last, Legal Aid South Africa here already, they have the biggest national footprint of a independent state body, independent in that they're not a government department, because they have to in terms of being accessible to all the magistrates' courts. Have you looked at any partnership with them, whereby people can access their offices, make complaints which then can be referred to your regional offices or whatever? Your call center, do you need your own call center? They have a call center. Can you not go into a partnership with them that if a matter relates to the public protector, that it then gets referred to you in some or other form rather than setting up your own call center? Because they've got a call center, you want a call center, the presidency has a call center, and there are various other call centers. I mean, should there not be rationalization of call centers to ensure an effective one? So I think I hear your concern about more money, but what's interesting as well is that you, everybody else came and told us how their budget was going to be cut, 1%, 2%, 3% cut over the medium-term budget period, the three-year period. You haven't told us that. I don't know if that means your budget is not being cut. We had the Human Rights Commission complaining that they don't even have funds. That, for example, Public Protector, you went off to Kuruman, where you have an office. You know, that they would have liked to have gone there on the service delivery issues with the schooling. But they couldn't because they didn't have the budget. So, you know, we're also having requests from them. And I think it's just an issue of often one has to look at, what's the expression, cutting the cloth to suit the person, and that yes, it would be nice to give you more money. It would be nice to give lots of more money so that people who can't afford civil litigation can get involved, can have access to that. it would be nice to give the Human Rights Commission more money. Everybody wants more money, but you've got to actually see how you taper things. So, Chair, those are sort of my questions and comments, but why is it that you closed Siya Buswa and the other office in I think it was Mabupane, and yet one we've been consistently over the years complaining about was Kudamang Freiburg Uppington, and in the sparsely populated provinces?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Public Protector. My first question is relating to systemic investigation. You've given us a few that you finalised, that you've mentioned you're doing eight. Can you please tell us what are the others? Are you able to tell us what the other systemic investigations are that you are currently busy with? My second point is, I think you need to also put a category of, in your report, as cases ignored. Now, it's one thing saying you'll take a year to finalise the investigation. It's another thing to say you'll take a year to give us an answer on whether you're going to even do the investigation in the first place. You know which one I'm talking about. I asked you a year ago whether you're going to investigate systemic problems in the maintenance system in the country. Now, given that justice is one of the problem areas in particular, I would think that's justified. I also asked you 2 or 3 weeks ago at a meeting with you whether you're going to do it. You promised me an answer within a week. I'm still waiting. Can you please confirm today whether your department will investigate systemic problems in the maintenance of children and child maintenance in the country? Because there are ongoing complaints, and I would actually suggest that it is a bread and butter issue. There are many, many, many people who are complaining on a daily basis that they cannot access the courts, they cannot get there. When they get there, it gets postponed over and over again, often because there aren't enough people to investigate the cases, to investigate the issues, whether people are working or not, and it is a real, real problem. Now, the other issue on a potential systemic investigation is, in your justice complaints, how many of those relate to police not being able to do what they're supposed to do? Police not taking on investigations, police refusing to register cases, police not taking proper evidence, not doing proper investigations, because that's a trend that I'm certainly picking up quite often. People go to the police and they say, we don't have enough evidence. They don't seem to understand that they are ones who are meant to get the evidence. Now, I actually like to suggest and ask your views whether you would be prepared to do a systemic investigation into that. Because, in my view, it's one of the major problems in our entire justice system. It starts with the police. They do not take on cases they are supposed to. They do not investigate them properly. They do not take proper statements. And as a result of that, all of the following action that ensues doesn't get a suitable outcome, because you can't go to court and get a conviction if you haven't got a proper case to bring to the court. And I really would like to ask if you would consider taking that on. Secondly, your government departments that are not cooperating, you did say that there are some that don't. We have also, with the Human Rights Commission, had similar problems. They kept on telling us that there are some departments that just don't cooperate with them and to ask, give them information they're requesting. Is it a major problem in any particular department or departments? And if so, will you please tell us today so we can try and follow it up? As far as municipalities, I'm just interested in municipalities, but confused.
So,
can
you just repeat the last one before
municipalities? Departments, the government departments that aren't operating when you ask for information. It's just a matter of interest. I mean, the kind of complaints you get about municipalities, is it issues that are within their mandate? Or are you finding that a lot of those are because as an ex-councillor, I know people often come and say, well, we haven't got houses, we haven't got this, but it's not within the mandate of local government necessarily to get this. How much of those complaints are related to issues that aren't within the local government mandate? And then I think that was it. Yeah, thanks for now.
Thank you, Chair. What I just need to know is, what is the major obstacle in finalizing complaints or reducing the turnaround time in the investigation process? I'm looking at the number of complaints that you've actually dealt with in a year, and what finalizes almost like half the case. So it means half have actually not been finalized. What is it that you can actually say is the major problem in terms of finalization? Just give us an idea of that. In terms of performance, which provinces, what percentage of cases completed or finalized, and what percentage carried over? So in your distribution, you should actually just indicate the province as to what are the percentages. I'm a little bit worried about intake. You have 7 intake workers who actually handled, if I understand you well, 1,729 cases. And for me, intake is just receiving the cases, and you actually vetted. Some of the cases are actually resolved at intake level, probably referring them to the relevant structure. So, but for 7 intake workers for the whole year to do 1,729 cases of the total 27,000, I don't actually get it very well. If you can just clarify that. And also, what are you doing to really harmonize the caseload distribution in relation to provinces? Because if you look at, for example, in terms of caseload, it's 426 cases per investigator, as compared to Northern Cape of 137 per investigator. Is there any process you've embarked on to try and actually harmonize it? And I think in your response, you should actually indicate also whether you do take into consideration the intensity of the case, because cases are not similar. And you can actually talk of such number of cases, but find that some of them are actually really time-consuming. And with the graphs, is it possible to break down municipalities so that it actually gives a clear distribution of where exactly in this country there could be major problems? And if it's possible, just to indicate the type of cases that you've actually handled. Maybe on finances, I don't know whether I should ask this now, but with finances, I'm interested to know what is the cost of the loss of 5.3 million that has actually been registered. And if you can articulate the liabilities, 1.1 million, what's that? And also, how much was rolled over? In terms of income for the current financial year, what is the interest because it's not registered? Thank you, Chair.
I think the very last question, I think it might answer, the very last question from the Honourable Pirana Majake is one I was going to pose. Technically, does this mean that your office is bankrupt? Because when you read what the Auditor General says, essentially that is what he's saying. But of course we've learnt over the years the Auditor General's got his own language. Mr. Jeffrey often says you need to decode it. So does this mean that your office is technically bankrupt? I don't understand what that loss means. I made a note on the side to say, can someone please explain this? Okay.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The CEO and the Chief Financial Officer are going to help us more on the last question, but I thought I would start with you, Honourable Chairperson. When we presented, the CEO explained that is a leftover from the problem we had last year. Last year we had something like 12 million, about 11 million, so it has actually reduced. And all of this money, as we explained last year, related to our leases. Because initially we didn't pay for our own leases. DPW paid directly, and there was no a budget for leases and for us, because it was taken care by DPW. Last year you even asked whether the transferring of the leasing responsibility to us had anything to do with the against the rules reports, and we indicated that no, it was a new program that BPW had just decided that entities have to take care of their own leasing programs. But then we needed to get more money. Those kinds of states that had more fetch in their own ordinary budget will be able to absorb such a huge responsibility within a short space of time. In our case, we were not able to do that. We've been negotiating with Treasury to make sure that we are able to gradually absorb that, and they've been helping us. Hence, we've reduced that debt to about 5 million. But the CEO is going to explain more later when I finish, and the CFO will explain. And I think the notes from the actual notes from the Auditor General to clarify that. And now I'm going to just maybe go with everything point by point. Honorable Jeffrey, you wanted to know why we printed additional report, because that is a waste. We only had printed the 20 previously. So when we printed additional now, we're expecting members to distribute those evenly, because all we have decided is just for this specific meeting to make sure that we have those, the small typos corrected with the help of the Auditor General. But those reports are usable, the biggest ones. And the only reports that are distributed throughout the country are the ones that you received now recently. I would still give the other report to members of parliament or to other people in the public, those who are not going to concern with the nitty-gritties, who just need to know what do we do. You think, should we have printed an errata? In this case, we didn't print an errata because the only copies were printed were the ones for meeting the deadline. So the new reports that were printed now are the ones that are going to be distributed across the country.
Public protector, sorry, I mean the fact is every member of this committee has two reports from you, identical, except for minor changes.
Yes, which we are then saying... No.
And that is a waste, that's basically the bottom line. We could have just simply been given an errata.
No, I think what we're saying is that we don't only print for this committee honourable members, we print for distribution, a wider distribution. So our understanding was that the copies you have, because you come from a large constituency of parliament and the distributor, but they need to be fastidious with because of the committee itself. But if people are going to reuse our report for reference purposes, those reports are valid. And over and above the ones that we printed for you, honourable members, we saw printing wildly because we distribute the report wildly. So what we are requesting is that the second copy that you have, Honourable Jeffrey, give it to a colleague, because we are still going to give these reports wildly to other people as well. So it's not a waste. That's what we're trying to say, is that it shouldn't be thrown away. If we have given that impression, we apologize. That's not the impression. Because we do bring these reports. Everyone who comes to our office gets a report. But because we are a committee that is in charge of us, it was important for us that we...
Can we just resolve this? I mean, what is the cost of printing 20 copies? And on what grammage is this paper? It's high gloss and very thick paper. I mean, it is. Does a print run no longer have any influence on your cost? What does it cost to print 20 to meet? We appreciate that you met our deadline. But what does it cost you to print 20? Is it no longer...
Are you able to give us a figure?
We are not able to give a figure. We can calculate it because we contracted for the total cost of all of the reports that are going to be printed. So we're going to print thousands of these reports as usual. But the 20 were just for the requisite deadline for Parliament. There isn't because those are going to be part of the number that we have ordered from the company. If we had ordered 1,000, it doesn't mean that they're now going to give us 1,020 copies. They would still give us 1,000. But I do apologize if we gave the impression that the previous ones had to be thrown away. They shouldn't be thrown away because they still contain information that people need to know about this office. Thank you. Honourable members, I then go to the question of slides. I do apologize that as we added new information to what we're trying to address as per the questions that were raised by MPs, one of the available slides was no longer included. It was talking about footprint. We do, though, have a full document on the public protector footprint that we did last year be able to call that to you. We were asked to do that, to do our total footprints revised in the light of the comments that you made, including that belt of our offices. So the new footprint spoke to all of those, what we're going to rationalize and what we're going to keep. And yes, when we made a decision to close the Abushwa, it wasn't because Parliament asked us, because we were asked to rationalize and we applied our mind. In our view, we thought that there are certain offices that we can save from head office, because we're not an administrative head office. We are an investigating of head office. So certain things are done. In fact, head office in the Public Protector Office carries the largest workload. So we thought then we'd save Siyabuswa and the other one. But we didn't anticipate that the community, once we have the resource, it's nice to have it. And we're even reconsidering Newcastle in our new footprint, because we're saying perhaps we should never have had an office in Newcastle. The office should have been in Maritzburg, in Peter Maritzburg, where the seat of administration is. So obviously when we take away the office from Newcastle, those people are not going to be happy with us. But we are considering the suggestion that we have made about them looking at satellite offices with the other agencies. When you present last year, we had a difficulty because we don't oversee government departments. We oversee organs of state, and LASA is one of them. And a lot of complaints come from them. So we're still not able to use LASA. But the thought that you gave us, Honourable Jeffy, was a good thought. So we said it doesn't have to be LASA. It could be some other agency that we don't get a lot of complaints from. So the one that we thought we could use, which other ombudsman offices use, is the post office. They like it that way. But other ombudsman offices use the post office, and they have an office there in the post box, in the box, which is collected by the public sector. So that's something that we're looking. But if you look at the footprint document that we're going to give to you, it talks to all of the suggestions that came from Parliament, and then it weighs them, and then looks at what we think is first from our government. But pursuing the thought about making sure about regionalizing resources, cutting your suit according to your cloth. So we're moving in that direction. The total distribution of staff members, we're going to see if we can get a slide before we can leave on the distribution of the staff members. Maybe hopefully by the end of this we should be able to put it up. But again, I apologize for the fact that we gave it last year, which you're absolutely right, because it's not just about how many investigators, it's also about how many administrative people are supporting the office. At the moment, even administratively, we're struggling, because we have now decided to decentralize procurement and HR. All of those things require necessary capacity, and it is a bit of a struggle to do that. But in terms of numbers, we have a public protector that is responsible for three arms of government, three levels of government, plus other bodies. Really, the staff complement is really small. Even Treasury has admitted that, and TW has admitted to that. I hope we can get this line. And Honourable Jeffrey, your concern about trends is a valid one. And initially, the difficulty was because of the CMS. What we've decided as a team is that as we're upgrading the CMS, we'll try to suss out this information manually, because it does make sense that we should give you the actual content of the work, not just the numerical issues around what are we doing. So I trust that when we come to see you for the start plan in April, you will get exactly that kind of information. And if you don't get it earlier in our interface, we then say of those 15, what exactly were the issues. That information is available at the moment. Because of the CMS, it's not the one you can get through a button. People with a proper CMS system, they just press a button and that information comes. But it is information that you should get. And then you're saying, we're not using Parliament enough. We want to use Parliament enough. That's why in my request, I have said Parliament did not just pay attention to our activities in terms of the money you gave us. My special request was that Parliament should also pay attention to the content of what we said, and then we work together to assist government to attend to those issues. But if we haven't provided enough information for you to assist us, we are willing to provide that information because we do want you to assist us, and we are assisting you because the oversight function is a parliamentary function.
Okay, just to add, I mean, the bottom line, I mean, specifically, Justice, is about your complaints. The Chief Master is coming to us next week. What do we say to him about the problems that the public sector has detected? Nothing. Because we have nothing. Okay. We had Larsa before us on, you say there are problems with Larsa. We had Larsa before us on Tuesday. What were we able to say to them about problems that the public protector had picked up? Nothing. We weren't even aware that there were problems because this doesn't say in reports that there are problems. So that is the problem. So what would be useful is if by Monday we can get something which at least tells us, because there you have it's the exercise of parliamentary accountability. You have the heads accounting to us around what they're doing. They give us very nice glowing reports. It would be very useful to have the type of problems that you have. Some of the problems, some of the issues we ask them about are issues we pick up in our constituencies. Some we pick up from the media, but it would be essential to have that information. I think it's a big loss that we haven't in the past.
Honourable Jeffrey, I think you're absolutely right, because this is to reinforce your oversight role and in your normal oversight role. We are going to do that, but as you're speaking, Honourable Jeffrey, I was wondering whether Parliament will now consider the request we had made last year, but at the time Parliament was not ready to consider it, where we said that as departments are required to include the findings of the Auditor General in their reports, can we ask them to include the findings of the public protector in their annual reports? Because what did the public protector say to them, and what did they do about it? So it's something that I'm asking Parliament to consider, because it is about reinforcing the parliamentary oversight role, but we will do what you're asking us to do as well. Okay, let me just... We now then on the issue of trends. And you said some of our reports are not in our website, and I apologize for that. I must indicate that our knowledge management person has been sick for more than a year now, and for 2 years. And we're now in a process, and we have to deal with this data as compassionately as possible. But we are now in the process of looking at really finding a way that would ensure that we are compassionate towards this staff member who has helped us a lot when she was well, but at the same time we look at our operational difficulties. So we will though make sure with the resources available that we check right now to make sure that what of our reports are not on the website, and make sure that it is done. But it's just basically because it was a knowledge management function. At the moment, our quality assurance person tried to do that, but as an additional function, what her real role is to make sure that our reports are as standard as they're required to be at. But we'll do so, hopefully by close to this office, and on Monday we'll have identified all of the reports that are not on our website. Only one report is supposed to be not on our website. It is the only report I decided not to make public since I became public protector. It involves witness protection. And it is a good report and with good justice for the complainant. But we decided not to put on our website. Yes. The rest of them are supposed to be on the website. Right. On page 13, Honourable Jeff, you said you don't understand making a difference in the report on long wait for victims of human rights violations. We will make sure that at least for the members of the committee, we make these reports immediately sent to you electronically today. That we undertake to do this, to send to members of the particular committee what we're sorting out the website issue. But effectively what we're saying is that the complainant was saying they hadn't received their once-off 30,000 payment. This is a port. This investigation took a long, long time. So by the time we had been able to conclude it, the 30,000 part had been sorted out. But there was the issue of the fact that Parliament had also said that there should be other reparations that were not specific to that amount, but the TRC. And the additional issues were health benefit, social benefits, community rehabilitation, etc. So those ones had not really been done. And then we then asked that the department should sort that out. While talking about long wait for victims, is that even that part of it had taken a bit of a while, but by the time, just shortly before we finalized the report, some of it had already been achieved. So we were not going to make a finding against the department when it had already done what it was supposed to do. We then just collected the additional small issues that needed to be.
The issue, I mean, by the way, your computer's going to go flat if you don't find a plug. You know, you stayed for a long time, so that presumably involves human work hours. But, you know, in terms of the Act, they must exhaust all their legal remedies. And the problem that we understood from the Department of Justice was that they couldn't trace people. So presumably if the person had come up and they were the person that was on the TRC list, they should have immediately been paid. So I don't quite know what you were investigating. And then I think the point I'm making is it's not the other regulations, and we can give you a more detailed report, I mean education and health, they are from the relevant ministries, so they're not actually the responsibility of the Department of Justice or the Minister of Justice. So to say that the Department of Justice must expedite the drafting of these regulations is not within their jurisdiction. It would be that the Minister of Ministers of Basic and Higher Education would finalise their regulations. I can't remember where they all are. We got a report. We will, I'm sure, get another one next week. But that was the issue. But as I said, my overall question is, are you investigating issues you don't need to investigate? And if it was an issue of somebody who hadn't been paid their 30,000, I would be very interested in why. Because what we were being told by the department was we cannot identify the remaining beneficiaries, we do not know where they are. And the progress that they've made is because they've then gone and used, I think, the IEC voters' roll and various things like that, Home Affairs, constituency offices, due to try and trace them. But it wasn't that they weren't paying people, it was that they couldn't find them.
Honourable Jeffrey, we don't investigate matters that we need not investigate. We were investigating a matter of somebody who had not been paid 3,000. That's what I was explaining here. And then towards the end of the process, because this investigation, as I indicated, took a long time, and the money was paid. If the department was interacting with this person appropriately, he never had to come to us. People come to us when they have called on organs of faith and requested the benefits that they're entitled to under the Constitution, the law, or some other prescript. They engage with those people, and when that engagement hits a brick wall, they come to us. We don't take everything that comes to us, and that brings me to your next question, Honourable Jeffrey. We actually answered your question, Honourable Machaki. The intake team is not an intake team. It's intake, assessment, and customer service. It's IA. Those people are not a registry team. As I indicated when we started, this is a team that assesses. An assessment process is an elaborate process. It asks these questions that you talked about, Honourable Jeffrey. Is it within jurisdiction? Yes or no? Which jurisdiction would be, is it a matter in state affairs? Is it a matter that doesn't involve a court judgment? And that's only two questions we're going to ask in terms of jurisdiction. Then they have to ask, if it's within jurisdiction, should the public protector exercise her discretion? So there are jurisdiction matters, there are discretional matters. Should the public protector exercise her discretion to accept jurisdiction? So we will reject. We have something called an HA. Maybe I'll send an assessment form, because we sit as an assessment team every Monday, literally. Assessment team does the assessments. Then they bring it to an assessment meeting on Monday where we agree, yes, no, maybe you were wrong. Then we then ask the question, should the public protector exercise her discretion favorably? The questions we then ask then would be, firstly, is it a matter that is older than 2 years? If it's older than 2 years, are there compelling reasons why we should still go with it, yes or no? And then we go to alternative forums that could address the complaint. You asked, are we referring enough to the IPERT? Yes, we do, Honourable. We even have an MOU with them. But a lot of the police matters that we've dealt with are matters that are outside the jurisdiction of the IPERT, or the complaint involves the IPERT itself having not been able to carry it through. The IPERT, in its reincarnation, you will recall that it no longer deals with service failure. It now only deals with service failure. We've now, after meeting with the IPERT, I think what, 4 weeks or so ago, we decided that we need to review our MOU and bring in the secretariat, the civilian secretariat in the police, but we now have a tripartite. Instead of a bilateral agreement, we're not going to have a bilateral agreement. Because previously we used to send these complaints to something called the police inspectorate, the service failure was. And then they'll still come back and say, nothing has happened. So we need to know who we're talking to on the other side. So we have bilateral agreements with the Public Service Commission, the Auditor General and others, so that when we refer the inspectorate, the judicial inspectorate of prison, so that when we refer, we don't send it into a back hole, because again, not all prison matters, for example, fall under prison. So we always have to go to the MOU to look at what are exclusions. Then, Honourable Jeffrey, there's also the question of remedies. That's a difficult part, because a lot of institutions don't have civil remedies. We can send it, for example, to the SIU, but it's not going to be able to make the kind of remedial action that says reverse the contract. They've got to take it for prosecution, and then it's a longer process. That's why the NPA SMH brought investigations to us. We have these number of files where they say, please look into these for us, because you have other remedies that you can institute without waiting a long period. But I still want to say, you are right that this system needs to be perfected. I was talking to some agency a couple of weeks ago to say this question of rationalizing what we do and closing the gaps, we still need to work hard at it. And that's part of the reason we had this good governance conference. One of its focuses is strengthening synergies between these oversight bodies. And it's not just the agencies, it's also bodies in parliament, such as your petitions committees. We don't want to be investigating something that a petitions committee is already seized with. So we are working on that. For example, I'm investigating a matter and I'm told that the matter has been given to the Auditor General. Even though the Auditor General is not an investigations body, I don't investigate. I then call my colleague and say, they're telling me that they've now given it to you. Are you handling it? And then he will say, I'm handling it. And then we talk, and then his team and I meet occasionally to so that I can be given feedback on what are they going. At the end of the process, he indicates to me where his terms of reference were limited. Unfortunately, Honourable Members, where their terms of reference are limited, we still have to make sure that we take over to make sure that there is full justice, not partial justice. But we're still perfecting the system. It is not as good as it should be. We also met with the SIU a couple of weeks ago. We were so grateful that they did something that the presidency was supposed to have done in terms of edge. Every time the president makes a proclamation, someone in the presidency is supposed to inform me in terms of the SIU edge. But because everyone is busy, it wasn't happening. The SIU recently then brought us everything, every proclamation about their involvement, and then we discussed what we'll be doing, and then we agreed again that because where they are working, we're not going to get involved. For example, we asked to deal with all of the tenders that were issued by DPW on leases. Mr. Shushabangu asked us to do that. And my view was, it is within jurisdiction, but should I exercise my discretion favorably, considering that the SIU has been asked to do the same thing? So I sought a meeting with the SIU to find out what are you doing. They showed us that they were doing everything except that their proclamation is limited in terms of time, like up to 2010, and therefore not after 2010. So we had to look at where we should ask the president to extend the proclamation, or should we take it over? Our view was that it's better that the president extends the proclamation to cover up to 2012. I think the answer is we don't do things that we shouldn't do, but we make sure that justice doesn't fall through the cracks, because maybe the institution doesn't get enough powers to do certain things, or they don't have enough remedies to deal with the remedial action.
I mean, on your one slide that's in your annual report, you talk about 1,692 matters, complaints not having jurisdiction over. Okay, so that's understood. The issue, though, is where you, in terms of Section 6.3 of the Public Protectors Act, where you don't investigate because reasonable steps have not been taken by the complainant or the aggrieved person. Are there any, how many, there's no figure for any complaints, so that would be an issue where you do have jurisdiction. So it can't be part of the 1,600. But then there would be, should be a separate category where the all reasonable steps have not been taken. It's a discretionary one. But there's no figure for that. So one can only assume that you're taking everything that somebody brings to you that you have jurisdiction over, and that you're not using your discretion in terms of 6.3 to say, look, this matter, you haven't exhausted all your steps.
Under record, we deal with both discretionary matters and NJs. If you look at page 9 of the annual report, where we say the year at a glance, and the third category there is investigations, we say we received 20,626 cases or initiated, and then we say 303 of those cases were referred to other bodies. Those are discretionary matters.
I'm talking, that's a different discretion. That is where you have a matter and it is something that should be investigated by the ISU, by the Pensions Ombudsman. I'm talking about the cases that to my mind would be, let's say when you get your report we can see, but where you're the person who was complaining about the reparations. Had they actually gone, let's say they hadn't gone, but they come to you, you would then under 6.3 say, no, go back to the Department of Justice, you haven't given them enough time to respond, hypothetically.
We refer it ourselves to the institution itself, the internal. If, for example, you come to us and you say, you're not happy with the way the Department of Correctional Services dealt with you, the department itself, not the inspectorate, and then it's a ministerial issue, and then we think the minister can handle it. The referral includes a referral to the minister. We would say, please help this person. And I had initially said I will provide a copy of the assessment form, the assessment matrix that we have. It will show you where we're talking NJs, and then it will show you the act, and then it will show you referred. Maybe the use of the term referred is inappropriate, but it does. I'm just saying, for real at the moment, Honorable Jeffrey, it includes those matters. We would say, no, the Minister of Justice should settle it, or the Minister of Police, or the DG, whatever. But I'll ask for this one that's coming this week, to just maybe just send it to the Portfolio Committee, so that you can see the assessment template. For this week, you just get a sense of what did we assess this week and what did we do with it. Thank you.
May I just add one question and one example on the theme of doing things that you shouldn't be doing? But before I do, just the person who approached you on the non-payment of the 30,000 Truth Commission report, I assume that was before 2009, because absolutely nothing was happening. It was when this committee
came into office, that he started holding the department's feet to the fire. And since that day, there has been some action also, and the payment of 30,000 is now just about achieved. But I don't know whether the person who was in charge, I think that Mr. Seku was in charge, he probably had sunk beneath the water, and I doubt that it would have been possible for anybody to, a poor complainant, to get any reaction. The example I want to use, if you will allow me, is on doing things that perhaps you ought not to have done. It's on page 23 of your annual report, and it deals with the Western Cape Department of Health matter. It is called A Cry for Better Health Services. Now, I assure you that if there is one place in which there is no cry for better health services, it is the Western Cape. We are very proud of what Jim Wood has achieved. It is wonderful. May I, on the subject of the heating, just ask you, who is the inspired person who is giving titles to all of your reports? Because it's absolutely striking. This must be a journalist or former journalist. If it's not the glimmer of hope, it's what's the latest one on the tenders on the point of tenders. Every title is always wonderful. The Ethics of Luxury. On the subject of the cry for better health services in the Western Cape, which concerns apparently the Google Community Health Centre. Now, I just want to get a sense of where this fire really emanated from, because you have listed this example as an own initiative investigation. But it sounds a little contrary to me. The public protector conducted an own initiative investigation into a complaint related to numerous allegations by members of the community, including the media. So who knows what political activists and journalists were at work. So where does this plaintive cry actually emanate from? And at the end, this is a case where, quite frankly, somebody should have picked up the phone to Tien Zwerza and your matter would have been sorted. Because all that is recommended anyway in the end is that there should be proper signage at the Cook's Community Health Centre, presumably saying where you go in, where you go out, and where the emergency room is. Maybe there was no signage. That cleanliness should be observed in and outside the centre, and the workers presumably must be cleared away. The centre manager was required to address the conduct of the staff member. We're talking about one misbehaving health professional or paramedic. One member who was rude to the patients at the trauma unit, and there existed signs of inebriation on 28th. And this is entirely unacceptable, but is this the subject matter of a full public protector own initiative report? The center manager also had to immediately introduce management interventions to prevent any use of alcohol. It just seems to me that somebody could have addressed the Western Cape Department of Health, and believe me, it would have been sorted immediately. Firstly, who writes these wonderful meetings? Secondly, what is this? An own initiative, a complaint, a piece of politicking? What was this really? And really, was it an inquiry necessary and a report?
Thank you, Honorable Smart, for the very interesting comments on our titles. Just starting with the titles, like everything else at the Public Protector Office, it's teamwork. And nothing is ever one person's achievement. The investigator comes up with the title, it is think tanked or brainstormed in their own unit, and then it goes to the quality assurance unit. If the quality assurance unit accepts it, it is accepted. If the quality assurance unit accepts it, it still comes to me. Sometimes I can engage and say, I'm not particularly happy. And then, yes, it is really a team effort in trying to make these memorable. Regarding the health center matter, this provides a summary only. It doesn't really provide the process in terms of how it was investigated. That indicated that things result in a report, then we needed them to make a finding, and we couldn't agree up front with the people to make sure that they fix the problem on their own. In that particular case, I understand that the idea of a complaint being an own initiative doesn't make sense, but This is reference to complaints that we picked up from the media. The investigator in the Western Cape, we picked it up in the media, media complaints about that center. And that, so when she's talking about, when he or she talks about complaints, not talking about public protector complaints, it's talking about, this is how investigators do on initiatives, is that they pick it up on the media or they're driving home and they see the injustice or they see the problem. And then they then ask their head of province to approve it. And then it comes to national then, so if we say yes on that. But I'm hoping that my team sit up. Normally when it's a center, we talk about those internal remedies in that center. So in this particular case, this person had, the people who were claimed to have made complaints, they said they'd drawn the thing at the attention of the center manager. But you are saying perhaps we should be looking at internal remedies is beyond the management of that organization involved. We should look at the administration. I think we take note of that. Because if it can be fixed by them, we are happy. My message, for example, with the local government thing was that I'm going to give you a voices and use report because I want you to fix the problem. So that by the time we investigate, there's fewer things to investigate. Because we don't want to investigate things that they people themselves can concede that maybe we need to fix this one and they have the capacity to fix it without our assistance. Thank you, Honourable.
It should be said, even though we do raise the concern that that's something ought not to have been investigated or etc. But it has to be said that we think it is wonderful that South Africans have confidence in the Office of the Public Protector and that they approach you in such numbers. These are the kind of problems that we can deal with one way or another. But it's very important, especially in these times, that people do have that confidence in you. And so please don't misunderstand me. We like it when you take things on. It's just that because the role you are playing is so important that we don't want to see you undertaking jobs that are not necessary.
Thank you, Honourable. And thank you to Honourable Jeffrey as well. We do agree that when we don't have to do something, we shouldn't do it. The other issue, though, that you've raised about internal remedies, one of the letters that people hate most, and they have raised it with me, is that letter, because we do write those letters. The letter that says, based on what we've heard from you and during the assessment process, we ask you telephonically, what have you done? And we have now decided that we should exhaust internal remedies. They have said to us during the stakeholder consultations, we should be a little bit more circumspect about that, is that often some of the people don't have the confidence to approach a station commander in a police station, for example, because we always say to them, you haven't spoken to the station commander, go back to the station commander. So not everyone is capable of approaching an NEC, for example, let the last resort before they go to transport it. Hence, in our case, we make the referrals ourselves instead of just now sending them and saying, go back. So we say, I write this letter to, it's sort of like a dear colleague letter, and say, this letter has been brought to me, but I've noticed that you haven't insisted with it. Can you kindly look at it? So, and then we close it on our side, and we write to the complainant to indicate that we've given it to so-and-so, the highest authority in that area, and then can they liaise with that person. And should they not be happy, though, they are welcome to come back to my office. Honourable members, Honourable Chairperson, I have dealt with the issue of the spread of offices. I've dealt with the issue of matters that we decline and that we do decline and then indicated that we are sensitive for and how we handle it and also providing support from the distance. Even when, for example, we refer, we still keep a watching brief to make sure that the conclusions are satisfactory to the complainant. But it would be removed from our investigations when it's watching brief. It remains with the customer service people. And then, Honourable Jeffrey, you wanted to know, is there enough coordination amongst Chapter 9? We are increasing the levels of cooperation every day, every year, and every month. We're looking at different ways of increasing the cooperation. At provincial levels, we have forums of all of the C9s, where there's discussions and where there is There are brainstorming sessions around how to collaborate on this matter. At an institutional level, we have bilateral agreements that are renewed every year, and where we pick up that things didn't go as planned, we look at amending those bilateral agreements. The good governance program is also looking at strengthening synergies. One of the instruments we've been working on in the last 2 years is a framework for collaboration amongst institutions charged with oversight, with integrity oversight. So that also is trying to look at what is the best way, because not only do we find ourselves sometimes doing the same work, but we often find that there are certain things that should be done that are not done because of the lack of synergy. So that's something we're looking at. I've answered the issue of Lhasa and indicated that we are, though, pursuing the vote minus Lhasa for now.
For you, Graf, I mean, I see that the staff complement has been put on.
Yes.
That's unfortunately the staff complement, not your existing staff, because according to your report, you have 269 staff members, and you say you've got 10 temporary staff, so it's 279 that you're employing at the moment. That's 299, so that's presumably all posts. But even with that, and it's not a split between how many, well, I suppose one could work out how many investigators there are, but what's alarming is that, for example, one of the most populated provinces, or the most populated, or you've got it down as the most populated province, Gauteng, you've dropped your staff. Last year you told us you had 20 staff members in Gauteng. And your mismatch of your least populated province, Northern Cape, has the most staff. I mean, it's bizarre. So I do think you need to look at that quite seriously.
Let me just firstly talk about what we see on the board. Honorable Jeffrey, may I address you on the post that you see on the board? These posts are as is today on the 12th of October, so that's a mistake. So we're giving you the confidence, because towards the end of last year we got money from Treasury for additional posts. And we also, the posts now, what we're seeing here, we're now also seeing our posts including our temporary people.
It doesn't make sense that Northern Cape, which doesn't have a problem of in terms of the figures you've given us of caseload, at Gauteng you've reduced the number of staff, which has the worst problem.
I just want to indicate that we're giving you field posts. So in Gauteng, if it looks like we only have 19, it's because we've given you the horses, they have been filled. But maybe let's leave this one until they have given us a proper distribution now, which she's working on it. And then we're going to talk to Northern Cape. I'm also going to explain that there are two things that explain the figures in Northern Cape. The first one is Kruman moved from Northwest to Northern Cape. So that just automatically increased the staff. So that's one city. The second issue is Northern Cape is a small but vast province. They have to travel vast distances. So to be able to service the whole province, they have to be able to split in different directions. Right now, as we're dealing with Kuruman, it's been very difficult to conclude that business. But Kuruman was better. When we're dealing with Oliphant's Hook, it's been difficult to follow up on a day-to-day basis because of the amount of distances they have to drive to make sure they can help to conclude the problem there.
Protective still, I mean, I've been going on this for years. I mean, your northwest staff component is also too high. 24. I mean, you are at least reducing that. And on your own figures that you've given us, the ratio of investigators to complaints in the Northern Cape is within limits. Your target is 144, where Northern Cape is 137. And, you know, the population, according to your own figures that you gave us last year for the Northern Cape, is 1.1 million. You've got, yes, I know, but you've got 25 people servicing 1.1 million. What's the population of Gauteng? It's 11 million, according to your figures. It doesn't make sense. And it also relates to the office issue in terms of, I don't know what the population of the Nelson Mandela Metro is. It must be over a million. They don't have anyone. They don't have an office. Northern Cape, with its 1.1, has got 3 offices.
Honourable Chairperson, if you were to ask Honourable Jeffrey to let me finish the explanation, he would have gotten the answer. But when I start Ms. Fenton, Honourable Jeffrey goes back and talks about the letter that you have been talking to us for 3 years. And I was in the process of answering. If you were to let me finish, you will get your answer. Will you do so, sir? Thank you. Right. Starting back with the Northern Cape, I had indicated that part of the problem is that Kuruman, which was the northwest, went into Northern Cape. So obviously it went with its people and office. So we didn't add people. It was a natural thing. And secondly, in terms of the numbers in the Northern Cape, I said the issue is the province is vast. So even though they are situated in 3 places as we speak at the moment, in Uppington, Kuruman, and Kimberley, they have to split in different directions every day to be able to service that vast province. They drive 400 kilometers the other day to go to another part of the province. We had to drive about 700 kilometers in one day. So they have to do that, so that's part of it. But the idea of rationalizing staff and making sure that there's an equitable distribution is something that is in our own footprint. It doesn't mean, though, taking away resources where they are needed. It means when we get additional resources, we distribute them differently than has happened. When we started with the distribution program last year, when we got the new positions, the agency for me was to give every province senior investigator. So it wasn't a question of how small and how big, because the biggest problem was the level of supervision in the provinces, because most of them had only investigators and they didn't have senior. So everyone then got the same number of senior investigators, regardless of the size of the province, because it was going to be about the level of supervision and obviously carrying the workload. And you write about Gauteng, having not enough people. Firstly, the numbers of the investigations in Gauteng has increased exponentially. But two, the other reason that Gauteng now is having less people is because some of its office has now been absorbed into national. The Mapopane office has now been, because we've now given you, that's what is confusing, because we've given you the figures as today, the bulk. So Mapopane people are now, have been distributed to national, because we couldn't send them to, we taken away that office. They didn't want to go to the Johannesburg office. They're dealing with national. But I just want to indicate as well, Honorable Jeffrey, national deals primarily with Gauteng cases, deals with national with national departments plus Gauteng cases. You asked us, what are we doing to rationalize the workload? For example, when it comes to Gauteng at the moment, our intake process is that until we've sorted out the numbers, we are only sending building problems. Of those complaints that come straight to national, we normally redirect them to where they belong. So if the matter belongs to Mpumalanga, we send it back to Mpumalanga. KZN, we send it back to Mpumalanga. When it comes to Gauteng, we're not sending things back to Gauteng. We bring it to national, and then we're only giving them billing problems, because billing problems, we have a dedicated station there. We are, though, we have engaged now with the Gauteng manager. We've sent a new manager. For example, we were aware that Gauteng was backing with disposal, because it wasn't just new, it was also disposal. we sent a new person there. We're talking to them about giving them more interns and in addition to additional investigators. And in the new redistribution of people, we will be doing that. But just in principle, we're on the same page in terms of what do we do with additional investigators. Not with the senior investigators, because our senior investigators are linked to the branches. We are planning to make sure that each province has the same branches that we have at national. So each province has to have an early resolution branch, a service delivery branch, and a good governance and integrity. That's what we're doing. Because it's costly for investigators to come from national, from the good governance and integrity, to go to investigate. But it also takes longer to do that. So the idea is to replicate the structure. Hence, the giving out of senior investigators in the same numbers regardless of who you were. That was the rationale that was sent and put, honourable members. The idea of a call centre for all of the chapter 9, I think we can discuss it with the other chapter 9s. I don't know if any of them have call centres, because most of them don't deal with day-to-day administrative infractions. They deal with major, if we take the Human Rights Commission, it deals with a lot of major human rights issues, which would be systemic issues. Your day-to-day administrative infractions of some of you didn't get a proper decision is not the kind of things that they would necessarily deal with. So as far as I know, they don't have a call centre, but when it comes to sharing both...
Raising the issue.
No, thank you. Okay. When it comes to sharing buildings, there have been discussions around a precinct. There's even drawings being presented around the possibility of a precinct. We're talking about a Chapter 9 house, and our view was maybe not a house, maybe a precinct, because they are distinct functions of these institutions. And so that is ongoing, and there has been a document that talks to that. Even in the provinces, there are attempts to make sure that these services are together as much as possible. But secondly, that where one office already has an office, the others use it then as an agent to collect complaints for them and then forward it to them. So that's something that is at a high level. We have also struck a deal, or in process of striking a deal with the government centres. The centres are run by GCIS, not as our agent, but as a centre where we can arrive at. They wouldn't collect things for us because they are intricately involved with the executive. But our people can use that as a centre where when they do our mob services, they go there. More something like a second court kind of thing. So that's part of the footprint that we will be presenting to you. The footprint is talking about leveraging stakeholders to stakeholder relationships to reach more people without necessarily increasing the number of offices. But you asked the question about the metros. Have we considered it? It is in the footprint. It is talking about offices in the metros. It is talking about what then are we going to do with the outlying areas, which we propose to deal with according to our mob services and satellite offices as opposed to regional offices. That is basically the approach.
What are you saying, that the institutions already on an agency basis in some cases will take complaints to each other, or are you postulating that it's something that could be done in the future? Is it already happening?
Thank you, Honourable Smuts. It's something that is in the proposal. There has been a process where we are meeting with documents that are being prepared, and it's something that we are working on. Hopefully, by the next financial year, we would have concluded the process of how we're going to structure the buildings and this issue of agency proposals. Right. And we have been talking about it. In our own document, this is covered in this. We have a document that is called Strategy for Accessibility of the Public Protector. So it talks about distribution in terms of physical space. It talks about agency arrangement. It also talks about issues such as language and everything around making sure that we are compliant with Section 182.4 of the Constitution, which requires this office to be accessible to all persons and communities.
May we ask, who are you interacting with, since you don't account to any ministry, but line ministries do send you your money? At the end of the day, who's it going to be? It's us. We are the only people you count. Who are you interacting with? The Office of the Independent Institutions? If you're drawing blueprints and architectural drawings, how far down the track are we here?
You will recall, Ms. Mutz, not answering on behalf of the public protector, Advocate Mashwana confirmed when they appeared before us. There have been these discussions, and that the Human Rights Commission, on behalf of the collective, would be meeting with the Department of Public Works to discuss the matter further.
Thank you very much. That's still these sort of a political question. Somebody somewhere has got to say yay or nay. I also remember the idea of having a Chapter 9 situation at Constitutional Hill. Is that the precinct we are thinking about?
Thank you, Honourable Smart. We're not sure where the precinct is going to be. Initially, they were considering Constitution Hill. The last time I checked, Constitution Hill, there were land issues, availability of space. But wherever it is for us, as long as it is accessible to the public, those who are using taxis, trains, and things like that, and it's safe for our staff, that would be fine.
And it also relates to the matter of whether we end up creating an umbrella rights body, which would not include, really, in my view, I think you deserve to be separate. But remember the point, and I argued the thought that form should follow function, and perhaps we do now want to put the rights-based bodies together under one umbrella. So all of that would have to come into consideration before a campus is created for Chapter 9. So I still wonder who takes a political decision.
No, Ms. It was members of this committee, perhaps not in this parliament's term, but in previous terms, who raised the idea, perhaps idealistically, with the light shining from the eyes, that all these rights bodies should be housed in one, let me finish, in one precinct, to make them all accessible to the general public. Now, that came from us. I acknowledge that the ultimate authorization thereof has to be taken by someone. Obviously, that would have to be government. We'll have to see at the time who that will be. Obviously, the Minister of Justice would be one of those persons, as well as the Minister of Finance. I'm not worried about that right now. The important thing for me is that talks are ongoing. Until we spoke to Advocate Mashwana, it was a pipe dream. I'm encouraged by the fact that we're at the stage where even drawings are being floated around. Who authorizes it in the long run? It will be government, whether it's the cabinet as a collective, Minister of Finance, or whoever else. That's it.
Thank you, Honourable Smart and Honourable Chairperson. One issue, Honourable Smart, that you raised about the distinct nature of the political territory.
Can I interrupt you?
Yes.
There have been demands virtually for a comfort break. My apologies to you, Advocate Morenzana. Can we have that comfort break and come back? Well, yes, but we'll reconvene at 12:15. We've been going for